We're going to do a game at the start.
Okay. All right.
Just a little quick game. This
Fun
is a
times?
Metacritic game. We're going to talk about two games on Metacritic. We're going to, I mean, there are two games that have the same Metacritic score, but they have different user scores.
Okay.
We're just going to guess the user score based on the game, I guess. I think. Or we could, do you want to do like a higher or lower?
Well, so I was going to say, are you going to read me both sets of scores plus like one blurb about each game when I guess
no.
the game?
Well, maybe. Or? Yeah, we can do that. I want you to guess the score, guess the user score.
Okay, sure.
Based on the game and the Metacritic score. The first game is, of course, Clair Obscur Expedition 33.
Right.
This game has a 92 on Metacritic for critics. And its user score has a user score that is, I mean, notable.
Well, now I'm trying to think what notable.
It's okay, not 3.3, but it's like
56.
No. It's much higher than that.
75.
Oh yeah, way higher than that.
100.
Not quite.
83.
Higher than that.
91.
Higher than that.
98.
A little lower than that.
96.
Higher than that.
97.
9.7, yes.
Okay, cool.
9.7 on that. And now, do you want to guess the game that also has a Metacritic of 92?
Is it a recent release?
Yes.
Is it Blueprints?
Yes. Blueprints, Metacritic 92. I will say that that was based on the former score of 97 was based on 14,000 user reviews.
Okay.
Which is a lot. This Metacritic score is based on 417.
Okay, small sample size.
User,
although
user
still not
score.
Bad. You get in the multi-hundreds, you get a pretty good sample.
Sure, yeah. And what do you think the user response is to Blueprints?
Now I'm going to say 55.
Not a little higher.
68.
A little higher.
72.
A little higher.
100.
A lot less.
81.
A little lower.
78.
A little tiny bit lower.
76.
Correct. It's a 7.6. Isn't that interesting?
That's interesting. I understand that. I
think I do too. I'm really shocked at this, just the user size difference as well.
Yes.
The user base size. Like, maybe not. Blueprints is a lot less generally appealing.
Well, I think if anything that speaks but, to... I think Blueprints was a success. I think it speaks to how well Clair Obscur is doing.
Yeah. Clair Obscur is absolutely a wild anomaly in this landscape. I just saw footage of, like, its very quaint release party with everyone dressed up in the baguette outfits. It's very fun. It looked really, really, looked like a total vibe. I'm still going ham on that game. How are you going on that game?
We're going to talk about it.
We're going to talk about it. Okay. That's right. Okay. I can't wait to find out. Yea, verily, we partooketh in a most befouled mystery of murders in Pentiment.
Then the back half of our show, we'll be looking at a 6-year time-lapse photography of the rewilding effort at the park down the street.
My favorite, the visual segment for our podcast.
You would not believe how much it's transformed.
Where's the beef?
We've been asking for 30 years at this point.
I can't find the beef! Answers to this and many more questions today on Light Gaming. Welcome to Light Gaming.
You know that square patties don't have more meat on them? It's like a marketing gimmick. Like, they're the same amount of meat as the McDonald's ones.
Welcome to Light Gaming. This is the video game podcast, the lighthearted video game podcast about light games. And I am your host of Light Gaming, Jerome Barbatsis. And I'm joined by my modular, magnificent, and moppish co-host of Light Gaming, Alexander Hambrock. Say
Boy,
hello.
I don't know where to start with which one of those. I guess I am always swapping my arms and legs around.
Yeah. That's why I said what I did. Today, we are closing out our themed month of Medieval May with the only medieval game that we decided to play this whole month, Pentiment.
I can't believe I just put this whole month in the spreadsheet and you didn't say anything.
Listen, this is not my fault. None of this is my fault.
Next month, I think you made all the selections, so what goes around comes around.
Yeah, well, the selections I made had to do with Pride. I can't wait. I can't wait for the theme to be relevant again. But for now, we have committed to talking about Pentiment, Obsidian Entertainment's game of sorts. Hey, Alexander, why don't you tell us about Pentiment?
Okay. Pentiment is a 2022 game released, as you mentioned, by Obsidian Entertainment. You probably know them best for role-playing games like Fallout New Vegas and Alpha Protocol and Pillars of Eternity.
And Avowed, more recently.
And
Avowed?
Avowed, yes. They just put out Avowed, yep. It's a game directed by Josh Sawyer, who you also probably know from Fallout New Vegas and Alpha Protocol and a lot and Pillars of Eternity, a lot of stuff that Obsidian has done. It is not a big, crunchy, numbers-driven RPG. It is basically a visual novel with some walking, with a lot of walking around.
Mm-hmm.
It is set in and around an abbey and the local town, the Kearsow Abbey and the town of Tassin in the year 1518. And it is basically... How far did you get in this game?
No, I don't know how that's relevant.
Well,
at this point in time. We don't need to put me on blast 5 minutes into the episode. Why don't you keep telling us more about what this game is?
It's basically it takes place in effectively three large chapters, each of which is anchored around a different sort of murder mystery, each of which happens several years apart. You have one at the start, then one 7 years later, then one like 14 years after that, I want to say.
Okay. Wow. Bad luck.
Yeah, not bad luck. One person is behind all of them.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. And the structure of this game, at least in the first chapter, is that you play as a man named Andreas Mahler, who is sort of a traveling artist. He is here working on his masterpiece so he can graduate to being like a master visual artist, basically. And he is essentially doing a residency at the local abbey where he works alongside the monks who illuminate old manuscripts in a very traditional style in the way that, you know, monks in abbeys did for hundreds of years. But he wants to be more of a, you know, commercial artist isn't quite the right word. He wants to work for patrons, right? He wants to do big frescoes on like fancy houses and in churches and stuff like that. And all the while, the specter of the printing press kind of is looming as a thing that, among other things, is going to basically make this whole, is already making this whole arrangement really obsolete. And the future is arriving. And everyone in this town and everyone at this abbey is dealing with the fact that the future is continuously arriving in very different ways.
Mm-hmm. That's very interesting. It's, well... It's, I think it's very interesting on paper, which is, you know, a fitting turn of phrase given this game is takes entirely on paper. The way in which this game's narrative is given to you is through these textbooks, physically these textbooks, and the dialogue is in essence written out in front of you as it's going along. And it does sort of it's a very dense read, but it does have a little bit of content accessibility by way of a pseudo active time lore, if you will, where it's just a glossary and you can click at any point to take yourself a little bit back into the book, and the game will give you a bit more extra context as to what some of the terms or who some of the people are in the story. So that's why I said what I did. Get it? Do you get the joke now?
Okay, I get the joke now.
Yes.
And also other accessibility stuff. Everything is written in these sort of like fancy ornate fonts that communicate what Andreas thinks about the other person, basically, like how sophisticated they are. Mm-hmm. The smarter he thinks they are, the more fancy their handwriting looks and vice versa. But you can also turn that down in settings too to make it more legible because some of those fonts are difficult to parse occasionally.
Yeah, that's definitely what I did. Okay, now for the greater context of our podcast, just in case this is your first episode of listening, we had set up a very long running bit wherein I would constantly complain about Pentiment being on the shores because this was like an old side quest from the old podcast. And of course, it's like an opportunity wherein I would be like, reading, you know, the long-standing joke is that I don't read books and I don't enjoy it as much, which isn't fully true. I don't particularly enjoy print media. There are other ways that in which I consume text that give me the ability to decipher and understand literature just fine. And then the prestige was that I was going to come in on this episode and say, damn, this game rocks.
But that didn't happen?
That is unfortunately not what happened.
Okay, okay. We're going to talk a lot about why I love this game, because I do love this game.
I can't wait to hear about it, because I can see why you love this game.
Before we get there, I want your opinions.
Well, my opinion has very little to do with the story itself. It has very little to do with the caliber of writing and the idea, so much as it is that storybook-like execution and the way in which the game controls. And ultimately, for me, does not feel like I'm playing any sort of game. I don't like the way the text ends up being written or loading. It loads in this like hollow outline that then gets filled in, and it's extremely, it's just like, it's for me very un-ADHD friendly, like, please just give me the text so I can read it,
mm-hmm.
kind of way. And you can't, the text speed settings don't help at all with that kind of thing. The audio design is it's extremely scratchy and really, really annoying.
Sure. Okay.
There was no balance at which I was comfortable experiencing this story.
Kind of anti-ASMR.
Very much. There's a lot of gross mouth noises, a lot of book scratching. Everything is book scratched. It's not super great. The music is appropriate. It's all appropriate. It's just unpleasant. And if you're into that, that's great. I think that it probably adds a lot to the authenticity of the experience for a real historical kind of quote-unquote nonfiction account, or account, not nonfiction, fictional account of what's happening here. I like the idea of the annotated text, but since I was having such a hard time doing anything in this game, parsing it and caring about it, I by the time I got to the chicken guy at the start, I was like, I'm not clicking anymore these underlines. I'm just going to play this game as best as I can. And then soon enough, I just found myself skipping just about everything except the main part. And then I was like, oh, and then I realized there was this whole murder mystery where I was supposed to like know all the relationships and all everything was going on. And I didn't, it was, I just didn't. And then I felt overwhelmed and done. By the time I got to the first murder mystery part, I was probably like 3 hours or so in, maybe 2.5 or something like that. It's a really slow start, you guys. And I gave it a shot. And then I was just like, I just Googled like, hey guys, when did the internet think that Pentiment started getting fun? And they said, if you got to the murder mystery and you're not having it, you should put this down.
Yeah, that's probably true. You got to be kind of into like Andreas just shooting the shit with all his friends in town.
I so wasn't. That's unfortunate. The character building, quote unquote, was it felt unnecessary. I don't know. There were certain, I had just started getting into part where some of the consequences, the choices I made had quote unquote consequences. But ultimately I felt like if I had to guess, none of that really matters in the long run. Maybe that's just my previous experience with Fallout New Vegas coming through, where I'm like, that's not really gonna,
it doesn't, it
I
doesn't. I think
come back and fix it later if I wanted to, really.
I think it mostly works in that a lot of what's happening there with like very Telltale style, like this will be remembered type pop-ups and certain dialogue prompts.
Yeah.
Like mostly what's happening is that some characters can like exit the story permanently if you do stuff wrong with them. But also at the end of every section, or at the end of the first two sections at least, you are picking who you are naming as the culprit of the murder, and they are getting executed. And the game is not giving you an objective sort of analysis of if you actually named them correctly or not.
Yeah. Not what the game is. And that's not my bag, baby.
You could just, like, major NPCs can just get pretty much taken out because you accuse them of doing a murder, and then they're no longer in the rest of the game.
Sounds great. I mean, it sounds like the way I first played the Procession to Cavalry, where I was just like, fuck it, and killed everyone. Like, maybe I don't know. I should have pushed through, accused somebody random, and moved through. and just gone through maybe with a bad ending. I don't know how the game handles that scenario, but I couldn't handle the noise. Then I was just like, eventually I was just playing this like completely soundless experience trying to just click through this text. I could barely understand. I don't know. That's I'm a, I am sad that I am unable to deliver on the bit.
It's okay.
That we were setting up.
I forgive you.
I forgive me too. It was, I think, one last bitch about this game. I didn't particularly enjoy the movement and the moving around. I would have preferred had it just been like a, you just turn the page, or you're like, if it was an actual book where you're like, maybe the map is just a bunch of chapters and you can just click a place and then your character goes there or whatever. Maybe if this game were fully text-based, like a multi-user dungeon, I would have been super into it.
I will say, no, on that note, I have played this game twice through now, pretty much entirely on controller. Mm-hmm. Every time I've tried to use the mouse drag thing, it has not been my preferred way to play this
game. Oh, no, because you have to like click their feet to talk to them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Dumb. It's dumb. It's terrible. But even still, it was like, ugh. But I remember what I did. I chose... My character choices were Italian. I studied in Italy. I was a lawyer, an orator, and what was it? Occultist, which mm-hmm. I thought was a
yep.
fun combo.
Occultist is great.
I did, and I was lecherous in my pursuits. So I tried to be kind of like annoying and abrasive, as you know, as I am wont to do. And I just felt like it wasn't giving me what I wanted right away, apart from the kid who I don't know, and then the kid was just like, eat shit, and then he ran away, and I was like, oh
Martin,
yeah, Martin, whatever. Uh-huh. The hell, I don't know. The opening of the game at that point, it just was very, it was a little too demure.
Do you want to know what happens to Martin?
I hope he dies.
He sure does.
Great.
You wonder what happens to Martin after he dies?
Do they know? I don't know. He probably becomes a ghost, and then I'm occulting with him or something stupid.
I'm going to spoil a minor... We're going to stay away from big plot spoilers in this game, although I'm going to talk some structural thematic stuff in a sec here. I think it's very funny that Martin essentially is super shitty to his family, runs away from home, becomes a petty criminal, dies, and then his partner in crime comes back pretending to be him and ingratiates himself to their family and acts all super nice now.
That's funny. But tell me more about like your experience with it. Like I've rambled on negatively for the past 10 minutes now. I'd like to hear a lot more about what you get out of it and like what you did in your playthrough and some of your favorite moments.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think so. For me, it's a couple of things. It's one, if you've listened to this podcast for a while, you know that like I have very specific standards around writing quality. Mm. And I think this is one of the best written games I have ever played.
Absolutely. And none of my qualms, hopefully, were with the writing itself. It was just my inability to read it.
And part of that is because it is basically a novel, but it's possible to write bad novels. And this is a pretty good one.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got obvious literary inspirations. There's a good amount of The Name of the Rose by Umberto Eco in here. A similar sort of like murder mystery set at a medieval monastery, but expanded outwards in scope a lot to sort of really pull in the social fabric. I think what I like about this game, well, to the point about the writing, I do not think there is a spare line in this game. Everything that you read, everything that anyone says to you is in some way interesting, is in some way sort of like a deepening of characterization or an addition of context or a sort of extrapolation of information in ways that are I find continuously compelling. And also, it's a story set in this medieval transitional Renaissance period where really there's very little. It's very much uninterested kind of in the inner lives and the machinations of whatever's going on at the level of the lords, at the level of the barons, at the level of the aristocracy. It's very on the ground with lots of peasants, lots of small artisans, the monks themselves who kind of like, you know, live this very cloistered lifestyle. And that's really interesting because generally speaking, we don't have a lot of direct written records of the experience of people like that. They didn't tend to write. A lot of them tended to be pretty illiterate, right? Hmm. But the approach that Josh Sawyer took when sort of like directing this game, and he's spoken in the Fielder podcast about this, I think is really to basically, when trying to do the sort of historical interpretation, assume that the people are basically like us. And take what documentation you have about sort of the social infrastructure in which they lived And just kind of extrapolate outwards. Okay, well, what would we be like if we lived in these conditions, right? If we lived under threat of violence from the local baron, if we had these certain kinds of laws on the books, if we could or could not forage for necessary firewood in the neighboring woods because the abbey technically has control over that land, and in theory they can call on, like, you know, a man at arms to come and do violence to you and your family. Hmm. And like, spin all that back around and just look at how people have responded to things throughout history and just say, hey, it's the same as that. People are people. We fundamentally are kind of like of the same stuff as them. And so it's very, very easy to really get emotionally engaged with everything that all these characters are going through. And on that note as well, I would say kind of a key point this game is trying to make. It takes place over about 30, 40 years. Like, I think around that period, mm-hmm. from like 1518 to like 1550-ish, basically. And a lot changes in that time. In each of the three chapters, the state of affairs within this village and within this abbey changes dramatically from one period to the next. And I think when we look back, especially at history in general, but especially at sort of like, you know, these medieval periods, it can be very easy to think of them as being very static, as being these long stretches in which you just farmed the fields like your father before him, like your grandfather before him. And sort of it's this sort of like centuries of toil before all of a sudden enlightenment arrives and things begin happening very quickly. And I think this game actually believes that there's no 50-year period in history that you could ever be living in where you would not have meaningful things changing about the world around you and about how you understand the world that you live in. And I think, like, especially because the way that history gets recorded ends up being basically the central thrust of the entire game, because that is something that is open to contestation. There are different parties who have very different interests in how things will be remembered and what narratives from the future will, like, you know, will make of the events that actually occurred. And as it turns out, there are people who will kill due to things that are in the town's past that they do not want brought to light. And it's not even like big dramatic, there was a serial killer stuff. It's almost much more mundane stuff that just would be unflattering to certain sort of portraits of power or unflattering to certain narratives about, like, you know, how these people arrived and what their life is based off of. Hmm. And all of this stuff is unfolding via basically just endless conversations with people trying to make sense of the world that they live in. Okay. That's my big Pentiment speech.
I think that's really, really, really what they were going for with this game. It is super ambitious still. It's kind of like a historical interpretation of a game like Disco Elysium. But you kind of still be into that kind of thing.
If you hate like this kind of like medieval early Renaissance history, yeah, this game's not going to like make you a person who's super into those topics all of a sudden.
No, it's not. It's not welcoming and accessible in that regard. It is in others, but I think, and I want to recant or rescind kind of a complaint. One of the complaints I did, I mis-explained it a little bit. I said that the choices don't matter so much. I meant more like, you're making choices without understanding what the implications
are. Yeah, totally.
Are,
and it's very opaque.
You kind of have to live with that. And then there's obviously not any way to sort of respec. But that's why it ultimately, I know in my heart of hearts that it really didn't matter, right? I kind of missed that middle component there when I was talking about it. Because you're right, there are no throwaway lines. Like every little bit of dialogue could be used as evidence for these things and is illustrative of the relationships that these characters in this very small town have to one another. The very first murder, yeah, was basic. The motive that I could understand, maybe there's a lot more to it, but was just like this guy came into the abbey and started talking about Lutheranism, and then he ends up dead the next day. Like, that's not exactly like.
That sure seems like a likely motive, right?
Yeah. See, but so there's obviously a lot more going on, but even that is like, and by our standards, not enough to kill someone anymore. But that's just how the way things were. And then that opens up a whole lot of exploration and discovery for people who are into that kind of thing. And I think most, like, in a different package, if this game came in a different package, not even a different like medieval thing, like if its game just like was made differently, you know what I mean? I probably would have really loved
better,
it.
Different audio design.
Yeah.
Just like, you could just get the text with like a different wrapping. Yeah.
Or just like, I don't know if there was, if it had more, if it had like an infinite amount of money in it. Cause like Disco Elysium is a lot like this. You're making some choices early on that you don't really understand the implications of. And it's mostly narrative. However, Disco Elysium has so, like, obviously voice acting would make this game fucking unreal. Could you imagine?
Oh, that would be great. I would love this game fully.
That would help a lot. But there's so much text. You would need a Disco Elysium level amount of commitment and money or whatever to get it done. So I understand why it doesn't. But that's the kind of thing I'm lacking.
And if I do have a criticism, I will say this. I understand very intentionally, the game gives you one save slot. It auto-saves constantly. You cannot really save scum this game. Mm. So you can't really make different character choices or different dialogue choices and see how the results play out unless you kind of like get really finicky with like quitting basically before the next autosave has a chance to trigger. I understand that like the intention there is to make it so you kind of have to like play through the game, commit to your choices very rapidly, and then if you want to see different stuff, play through it a second time, which is what I did this time around. Having done it twice now, I would like it if I wanted to do a third time through, if I could actually like open it up a bit and start poking around in the guts and just like almost like again, yeah. Like some visual novels give you like a real sort of like forking chapter select where you could just jump back to this branch and be like, show me what happens if instead I accuse the old widow of being the murderer.
That would be really nice. A chapter book for your book, your storybook that you're telling. Like that's, I mean, I don't think that is completely unreasonable of an ask, especially for a game that is supposed to be a book or a choose your own adventure kind of book kind of deal. I do. Yeah, I think that it's a little authoritarian in that regard. And could benefit from something like that. I mean, Baldur's Gate 3 lets you fucking save scum the shit out of it, and it's even more massive game. So does Disco Elysium, right? Like, you can just do whatever the hell.
Man, I say scum the shit out of Pillars of Eternity. That game...
I have not played that game. Maybe I should.
We'll talk about them. I quite like them, but they are not to everyone's taste.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I mean, I have nothing really else that I want to bitch about when it comes to Pentiment, and I certainly enjoyed listening to you wax poetic about... No, I'm just kidding. Was it poetic or is it prose? Wax prose. Wax prose about Pentiment, because it is a fascinating object of a game, if nothing else, in my eyes. So
yeah, let me put my notes really quick here, see okay. If there's any last stuff I want to hit. Got a lot of it has to do with Chapter 3. I'll just say that the character you're playing as in Chapter 3, I love them. They're amazing, and I wish only the best for them.
Okay, great.
And also... Oh, yeah, just as like to get a bit specific here, as one example of kind of what you can expect from just the way that this game is thinking about history and human existence and stuff, a really good sharp kind of micro example is just the conversation that you can have in the course of the first murder investigation. You can go and talk to this old widow who lives kind of by herself in the house that she and her husband had, but he passed away recently, and as a result, the legal claim on her house, she can't inherit it, right? The house is going to basically be inherited by the Abbey, which technically has sort of claim to all the land in the area. And she's going to be kicked out of her home and basically will have to make do with something in some other way, in ways that are like, you know, that end up essentially forcing her into kind of indentured servitude.
Yeah.
And the point the game makes is that we might think that that's actually kind of like, you know, a long tradition of women being deprived of property, but actually they talk about how like that's actually a fairly recent change, that several generations ago within living memory, this woman would in fact have been able to inherit after her husband had died, and that all of these sort of like legal and social structures undergirding this stuff are not set in stone, but in fact are continuously sort of in flux, and that there is this space of contestation where people are unhappy about things and never actually sort of just sit back and accept their lot in life, but instead look for opportunities to, you know, change things, or just have lots of bitter and complicated feelings about the circumstances in which they're trapped.
Yeah, it seems like a real humanizing portrait of medieval times, which is an era that we often sort of caricaturize and summarize, kind of put into heuristics in our brain, wherein we think that people, just the serfs were just these powerless creatures, and that nothing, everything that happened was as a result of those in power and not due to social, societal constructs and movements and things like that, that would maybe affect change today. So, well, yeah.
I mean, I thought this was an interesting contrast with Procession of Cavalry, because that game is so flippant and this one is so serious. Interesting to compare to Manor Lords, because you're kind of just like playing a narrative about being down on the ground in a little village, like the one you're building.
I wish I had more time to really get into Manor Lords. I mean, I'm choosing to spend it on Clair Obscur, obviously, but...
And damn. I think it's like Nancy Drew, the Haunting Castle map.
Because they both have mysteries. Don't hurt your back, Stretch.
So it's all connected, you know?
This one has crime in it, though.
That's true. This one does have an actual crime.
This one does have a culprit and crimes.
And that's Pentiment.
That is Pentiment. If you have played through Pentiment and you want to talk specifically to Alex about it, you can follow us on Blue Sky. He'll respond there.
I certainly will.
That's I wouldn't imagine I'm going to be getting a whole lot of DMs about this one, unless they are complaints. Anyway, we're going to take our little mandatory ad break, government mandated ad break. That's right. It's the new administration makes us do this. So if you don't like it, you can blame them. And then we'll be right back for our monthly rants and raves. Can you believe it? Hi, it's me again, TV and radio's Wenden Spryke. If you're like me, you spend extremely expensive minutes of your day navigating the same thin piece of coated string in between your huge and highly radioactive veneers. What if I, TV and radio's Wenden Spryke, told you, and a stupid idiot dork with an empty IMDb page, that there was a way to make flossing fun again? I'm talking about the intricate nightly dental dance you do with your mouth teeth, not the unyielding trendy dance from yesterdecade. Introducing Florence Fletcher Fleming's flavored fluoride floss. It comes in a whopping 602 fantastic flavors, keeping flossing new and exciting all year round, and then some. They've got mint, double mint, triple mint, horse mint, rabbit mint, eagle mint, spider mint, winter mint, spring mint, summer mint, spearmint, shield mint, mace mint, peppermint, salt mint, mace mint again, but the different one, breath mint, death mint, breath mint, fig mint, ferment, forment, five mint, chive mint, element, bellament, umbrella mint, embellishment, and cork. And that's not all. Florence Fletcher's Fleming's flavored fluoride floss comes in handy-dandy lightweight floss picks that have their own solar-operated nail clippers, so you can be as fly as Florence on the go. Now you can have the perfect floss for any occasion. For a summertime governmental shake-up, start your day with impeachment. Just get canned, make sure you leave a lasting impression on your now former employer with unemployment. You can even freshen up your second Aunt Belinda's funeral with bereavement. Not sure which Florence Fletcher Fleming's florid floss fuck. Not sure which Florence Fletcher.
You did this to yourself.
Shut up. I know. Not sure which Florence Fletcher Fleming's flavored fluoride floss flavor to get? Sign up for our semi-weekly floss box and get a randomized floss every semi-week. Which floss did you get, small Keith?
Bubble mint.
Wow, I got bedazzlement. It blinds you! Okay, I guess you're not blinded.
Oh my god, your teeth gleam.
So take this moment to pick up Florence Fletcher Fleming's flavored fluoride floss at your local convenience store or order the subscription service at fffff.com today. You're sure to be free from disappointment unless you order disappointment, in which case you'll get loads of it. Florence Fletcher Fleming's flavored fluoride floss. Flashy floss flavors for flamboyant floss floozies.
Jesus Christ.
Hoo-wee! Glad that's done, because now we are that much richer.
Yeah.
I've got my hands wide open. It's that much.
$3.85, I think that check was
Three
for.
Very large dollars. That's why they fit the entire wingspan of my arms. We are back, and it's the end of the month, and we're taking it easy today. Unless we rant about really serious societal topics, which I don't know. You never know with me. It is our monthly rants and raves segment where we talk about two things we liked this month and two things we didn't like. So, but that's like backward. Like I do rant. The rants are the bad ones. So we talk about, but we talk about the good ones first.
Raves and rants doesn't roll off the tongue quite the same.
Yeah, way. I don't know why that is. But we are going to start with our raves. I believe I started last time, and I'm going to ask you to start with your first rave.
Hey, you know what game is really good?
What game's really good?
Clair Obscur Expedition 33.
Super good. Super good, right?
Super good, right?
That's a gimme. That's a bit of a gimme for you. There you go.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, like, just, I've not... Boy, it's also, it's an RPG-ass RPG, huh?
Yeah.
Like, it's real. Lots of customer...
It's Paper Mario, baby.
Lots of character customization. Lots of pouring points into skills and unlocking abilities.
There's a little bit of chores involved with some of the... Some of the numbers and the badges you get, as it were, the Hollow Knight-esque badges. However, there's like a lot more options, and then like you have to, I don't know.
I mean, it's a really good combat system that I think largely the stuff that, like, you know, the stuff you're unlocking and assigning to your characters and stuff is pretty much additive in terms of like... You're not just sort of like throwing on stuff blindly for the stat bonuses. A lot of the time you're trying to figure out like, okay, what combos with what to like produce an interaction that actually gains me some sort of like advantage in this fight.
Yeah. And if you are just sort of trying to min-max your stats early on, like before the actual final end bosses, you're kind of focusing on the wrong thing because you're going to get a lot more bang for your buck just learning the boss's enemy attack patterns.
Yeah. Well, and that's the other thing also. I am a parry freak, and this game has a good parry system. If you execute it, it feels awesome.
It's a huge tempo swing in your favor to do that. There's almost no reason to dodge at this point because like I feel like the dodge timing isn't really that beneficial compared to... Or like, what's it called? Gracious compared to parrying, anyway.
If I'm having trouble with an attack in a boss fight, I'll, like, do the dodging to kind of get the timing down more for, like, the next time around than, like, the first time through.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah. Like, most of the time, I'm trying to pull the parry, and if I can, even the counterattack, which is great. Yeah, you know what else is great?
What else?
It's about people who are in their 30s.
Yeah, it's super awesome.
And, like... And not in a way that, like, that still gives them lots of, like, intense emotions and things they care about, and even a lot of interpersonal conflict, which longtime Final Fantasy XIV podcast listeners of ours will know is always a frustration of mine when characters don't seem to believe different things and don't act on those beliefs.
Mm.
These characters certainly get into fights about stuff.
Yeah, it's great. How far have you gotten?
Not very far.
Okay.
Because I...
You're busy.
Yeah, and like I was playing it nonstop, and then I kind of like hit a wall this week because work stuff. But I just finished the village of the little painting dudes.
God, the gestrals are so good.
The gestrals are so good.
The gestrals are these belligerent paintbrush little freaks.
I'll say this: when you first get there, your people in your party will make a lot of pointed comments about how primitive and stupid they are. I don't know, guys. They built a village. What have y'all been doing, hanging out in your ruined Paris for the last 60 years?
Yeah, I don't know, man.
They appear to have like culture and technology and things.
Yeah, I wouldn't go as far as that, but I think that's a part of the a way to paint the ignorance of the people living on their island trying to get in there and get the paintress. I talked a little bit about this last week, right?
Great voice acting, like, I mean, just
fabulous. I mean, the main guy is what, Daredevil?
Yeah, they put
what a get.
They put budget, like the budget in the voice acting is good. And also, like, to the point I was making last week when you were talking about it, I think extrapolated a little bit here. You can see the budget of this game.
Oh yeah.
It's not the most impressive thing ever.
There's a little bit of jankiness, especially if you're like crawling through a tunnel with like your lamp out, your character's arms just start to like snap back and forth with the orb. It's like, okay, they couldn't quite polish all the animations off.
Yeah, but also, like, I'm going to be honest, if like the medium to medium high end of games looked like this for the foreseeable future, I'd be fine with that.
Yeah,
this game really... looks great. Like, I don't know that I need like a PS6 to do like a blisteringly incredible graphics. This has an amazing art style. It uses art style very effectively, and the rendering power is the good side of adequate.
The ROI on this game is absurd. We'd mentioned the amount of I don't even know the amount of downloads it has, but compare that to these AAA games with thousands of team members that don't get nearly as much ROI in terms of units sold. This thing probably has just completely eclipsed them in terms of, if that's your like main, if return of interest is your main sort of indicator of how much how worth it it is to make something with a small team of really, really, really good people, and how worth it it is for you and how much like value you get out of something, then yeah, this game absolutely beats those fucking AAA budget things out of the water.
Yeah, I think that there is a path forward that is charted by this game in both a good way and a bad way. I think in the good way that there's a path forward charted by it, and it's all the ways we're talking about, it is the more modest budget. It is like using that money very effectively. It is like choosing where you spend it and like, you know, and embracing your limitations and doing a lot with a little, and like you doing a small agile lean team. If there's a part of the path forward that also is a little bit more negative, or not even negative, just like has not quite shaken out yet what this will actually look like, we have been moving for a while towards like, or we are starting to move towards a system in which this game is built by a small core team and a lot of contract studios. And the thing about like the contractors and the contract studios, right, is that when you fragment up the development process like that, a lot of the stuff around like labor and labor negotiation can certainly get messier. And that's not gone. I'm not going to say it's not gone bad yet. It's bad because labor in the video game industry is terrible by default.
Yeah.
But it's worth keeping an eye, I think, on how that's going to like, you know, develop outwards, especially if it ends up being like a lot of stuff outsourced to studios in, say, the Global South, where then labor standards are even further different. And just a thing that I am being mindful of, even as I also am tremendously impressed by this kind of like the little game that could, which is sort of the story of this so far.
Pretty much. That was an amazing rave. Oh, can't do that. Copyright. Nope. I'm going to go now.
Don't get struck.
I'm going to go now because we got shit to get through. And we have limited mental energy that I have to edit an episode. I believe mentioned my first rave on the podcast before, but I've not actually raved about them. It wasn't in our trackers. This is the podcast, Artists on Artists on Artists on Artists, AOAOAOA for short. It is a podcast hosted by comedians Jeremy Colhane, Angela Giratana, Kylie Brickman, and Patrick McDonald. They are also many of them have been made appearances on Dropout, which we have mentioned previously. Some are also current or former members of Smosh, which we've also mentioned. So it's all in that sort of UCB LA sort of networking vibe. But I think I really wanted to showcase this content because it is a lot less famous than its Dropout or Smosh or UCB counterpart content. This is much more of a passion project for these four. And it's something that at least Angela has gone on in interviews to say, like, it doesn't really matter if this is good or not, or like succeeds or not, because it's just like such a fun passion project. This is a podcast wherein four characters, these actors and comedians, do complete character work a la, you know, something like my Judge Vowthry, but better.
Sure.
These people are like much better at this than I am. And they do it for like an entire episode, and they'll come together with like a premise. And the latest episode, or one, not the latest episode, but an episode that really brought me a lot of joy this month was the Jubilee Writers Room episode, where they would just constantly ideate on these shitty movie ideas. These people without any moral compass whatsoever, putting these like vulnerable people in a room to exploit them. They'll be like, no. They'll be like, I can't even fucking do it. They're so quick with it too. But I think one joke they made was like 13 refs, one Foot Locker employee. Like trying to figure out 13 refs, trying to figure out who the one Foot Locker employee is. Right? And they're making fun of these like content creators that have like, they blindfold these people and they're like, here's six tall people and one short person, and the tall people have to figure out who the short person is.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Oh my god, that's so nice. That must be so nice to live away from the sphere of the influence of Jubilee.
I watch less YouTube than you do, I think.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I needed to touch more grass. That was a particularly good one, but they've had some amazing guests. They've had, of course, Brendan Lee Mulligan and Izzy Rowland. They've had Ego Wodum. That episode is criminally underviewed. That episode was so fucking funny. Ego Wodum is a certified lunatic. They've had Paul F. Tompkins on recently. Some really, really wonderful And every, like, just wonderful guests, and everyone just gets into it. There's so many fights between these devices. They are just always yelling and fighting at each other, which I love. So I would check out Artists on Artists on Artists on Artists if you want something that will make you cry laughing in public.
That sounds great. We might need to add this into our
I've recommended it to you before and be like, please listen to this so that you have something to, we have more shit to pull from when it's time to be silly on our podcast.
I am adding it to my podcast player right now.
It's so good. I do think about Izzy Rowland's character of just being this guy's wife's friend. And then anytime the rest of the cast tries to litigate it, they expertly dodge any questions. There's no more character details about her. It's wild. Those are just a bunch of improv experts doing improv expert stuff in a way that is just it's free for everyone. Okay, what is your first rant? Oh boy.
Okay.
I just read it in the spreadsheet.
How much do you know about the reality TV show The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives?
Zero.
Okay, are you aware of this whatsoever?
I've heard of it.
Okay, are you aware of the quote-unquote scandal that broke a few years ago?
No.
Of, like, a TikTok influencer, like a Mormon mom TikTok influencer, who revealed that she and a bunch of her fellow influencers and their husbands basically were swingers?
No.
So that was a whole thing that blew up and was super controversial. And at some point, someone at Hulu was like, hey, what if we take this whole, like, influencer circle, these, they call themselves Mom Talk. What if we take this and we basically do Housewives or Keeping with the Kardashian style reality show, following them basically, like, you know, as they live their influencer lives and stuff like that. Mm. And I want to say out of the gate, everyone in the show, because I'm going to express some sympathy for some characters in this show with a bit of qualification. Everyone in the show is making objectively very good money. Between being a TikTok influencer and this TV show and the various deals and sponsorships mm-hmm. they're getting and stuff like that, no one in here is in any kind of, like, real material distress. Although even there are ways in which the success itself is visibly kind of, I think, sort of a prison for some of the characters, is something that you could really see on the screen. What also is interesting, though, is that unlike something like Keeping Up with the Kardashians, this is about Mormons. Mm-hmm. And although Mormonism cannot explicitly enter the frame very often, you don't get a whole lot of them, like, going to church and stuff like that, probably yeah. for liability reasons.
Yeah.
The fact that they all live in and around Salt Lake City and are growing up in Mormon culture, and all of the weird gender roles and, like, social upbringing stuff and all of it, and the way that it has shaped how all of these women sort of, like, view the world and themselves in it, and a lot of the contradictions around, for example, being, like, primary breadwinners for their households while also trying to live in the ways that, like, the church tells them women are supposed to behave towards men and stuff like that, it's a really interesting portrait of a lot of, like, contradictions that are all played up for the camera, right? Sorry, this sounds like a rave.
It sounds like you love this show.
It's fascinating. I think it might be a little unethical, and pointing at that, I watch it, right? So I'm part of the problem.
Yeah.
I'm giving them ad revenue. I can't really be upset about this here. But the rant in particular is, there's this one woman named Taylor, and the only thing I want for Taylor is for her to just move to North Carolina. Just put, like, 2,000 miles between you and Utah. Because mm-hmm. this woman, who was the one who kicked off the whole scandal, who was the one who kind of, like, admitted on TikTok that she and her, like, friends were swingers or whatever, is very clearly more emotionally genuine than anyone else in the entire circle. And the whole show is just everyone in her life being completely awful to her. And it's really hard to watch. Like, both of her parents are variations on emotionally and, like, you know, verbally abusive to her. She's taken advantage of by, like, everyone else in her social circle. She behaves erratically and can be unpleasant to be around, but in ways that read, at least on screen, as someone who is actively in distress, as opposed to a lot of the other characters who, like, you know, at least have a lid on it better. And watching the show, there's a part of me that is like, oh, this entire ecosystem, all of this money, all of this sort of like quote-unquote success between the TikTok and the everything, all it seems to have done is basically kind of construct a personal hell around this woman. And I feel really bad for her watching it. And I am, and I think that, like, it's an interesting reflection of sort of the ways in which a lot of entertainment content is not produced responsibly with an eye towards the well-being of people that it is focused on, whether they be actors or pseudo actors in the case of reality TV, or just, like, you know, people on game shows and stuff. That's the rant.
That's succinct. I knew nothing about that, so it is interesting. Is interesting derogatory, sounds like.
Yes.
Say, my first rant is the super popular, super viral song by Cat's Eye called "Gnarly."
This song, I don't know this song.
This song is everyone. This is just one of those songs that it came out earlier this year. I'm not big on K-pop to begin with, but this is just super mega viral smash hit, successful. And the song is basically about how it's weird you can describe thing with a single word. Describe so many different things in different ways with one word. And it's, you know, that's good for them. I mean, English is not their first language, so they put together a coherent song that is super, super annoying.
I think were we talking about this on Saturday?
We were talking about this when we hung, but then I said the rest of it.
My impression, based on like what I was told about it, like I was like, this sounds like a Lonely Island bit. Like
it does. I think as it came out, the initial response from what I could tell was really negative, but now people have kind of heel turned and said that they liked it all along, or that they're not, it's just not meant to be taken too seriously, or that it's like a joke. Nothing about this reads ironic to me. it's definitely not. It's definitely not meant to change the world. But like, it to me also just isn't fun. The lyrics. Here's some lyrics I can read for you.
Please do.
They could describe everything with one single word. You know, like, and that's the intro, and then it starts with the verse. Boba tea, gnarly. Tesla, gnarly. Fried chicken, gnarly. Partying in the Hollywood Hills. This song, gnarly.
Okay, guys, we're getting a little self-congratulatory here.
Yeah, oh my god, that new beat, gnarly. Fucking gnarly. Oh my god, is this real? that's the line that our friend New Girl Hannah was memeing on. Is, oh my god, is this real? That's how it's delivered in the song too. And it's just like, yeah, it's a little bit unaware of itself for me to buy into the bit that it's not meant. Like, this to me sounds a little serious.
Uh-huh.
It sounds like they're
sounds like they're kind of like trying to like backtrack a little bit and be like, no, it was totally meant to be kind of sardonic.
Maybe there's more, but like it's not. There's not that much more. They just say gnarly a lot. Gnarly. And it's whatever. Again, it's not my gripe is not with their command of the English language. My gripe is just that it's that on top of some real bad imitations of hyper pop beats. Like the Korean kind of pop industry machine is probably just as guilty of appropriating things that are a little inauthentic as the American pop machine is.
Certainly.
And this is probably one of those examples of them taking from queer artists and not really doing a very good job with it.
I can't think of a single country that has a good music industry.
I bet Algeria's is nice. I don't know. Why not? Anyway, that's pretty much it. I just think it's a kind of a vapid song and it's literally everywhere, and I can't wait for it to go away. What's your second rave?
Hey, you know what's really good?
Yeah.
That soup we had on Saturday?
It was really good. I almost put it in. We went to Kenki.
Yeah,
in Chinatown in Chicago. We did the Bilto noodle.
Yeah, because like we were looking at like the main menu and like I was looking at like the chicken and stuff like that.
That's
and then
good.
We had all of us, there were four of us, we had these build your own soup cards in front of us, and every one of us was ultimately tempted by them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the kind where you like you pick like your noodle, you pick your broth, you pick your primary protein, and all your toppings. And man, that was like the quail eggs that you had, those were
I knew the quail eggs would be fire. I love quail eggs. They're so expensive though.
I had I had kind of like a crisped up sort of like teriyaki pork skin.
Mm-hmm.
That was really good, except for the bit where that gristle got caught in my teeth and I had to shove my whole hand in there.
I wish you
like...
hadn't reminded me of it. That was horrifying. That was the most horrifying thing.
Okay, but everything was great aside from that.
You just had... this lasted, a good 5 minutes at least of you just sort of sitting silently, being unable to speak because it would tickle too much, silently kind of slightly leaned over your bowl and making just sort of these noises as if you were trying to hork something out of your nose canal. And then eventually you just said, fuck it, and shoved your whole hand down your throat and yanked out like a 2-inch long piece of tendon from the back of your throat.
To be clear, the problem is not that it tickled. The problem is that anytime I inhaled too strongly, it went straight down my windpipe.
That's just, I mean, that's dangerous. That would suck.
Yeah, it was bad, but soup tasted awesome. Noodles were incredible.
It was gross and scary.
Okay, that's my second rave.
Okay, my second rave. Chess!
We love chess!
Chess! I've been doing... I have been needing something that requires very, very little internet connection, but a lot of focus to either pass a little bit of time, maybe on the bus or something like that. It's very little intensity. So I've been doing chess puzzles on lichess.org or com or whatever. Those are fun. They've been really fun. They start you out. I started doing the ranked chess puzzles, and they start you out at 1500, and I crashed to 1000. I'm really bad at chess, you guys.
Oh yeah, same. No, I think we're both terrible at chess.
I've since climbed up to about 1300. I've understand. I'm starting to look for things, look for opportunities to swing tempo back by threatening the king and then making the opponent, as it were, have to kind of respond to my moves as opposed to being threatened in a certain situation.
Like, what makes a good chess puzzle?
Well, I don't know. I mean, a good chess puzzle has one solution that's like definitely the best, or it's definitely better than what I thought it was. A bad chess puzzle will have two solutions that are exactly the same, and then I happen to pick one that's like that. I happen to pick the one that leads to checkmate that was just not recorded in the match that
sure.
I'm copying from. Those are few and far between. I think people in the community are really good about hitting the thumbs down and thumbs up buttons on the ones that kind of suck or are kind of good. But yeah, they will often just teach me something. They will show me something that was directly in front of my face that I wasn't seeing before when I fail, much like a good reveal in a game like Blue Prince, which is obviously inspired by chess. So, I mean, if you like Blue Prince, try chess. Try just real chess. It's out there. You can just play it. It's free. You can do the chess puzzles, and it's no pressure whatsoever.
This episode paid for by the Chess Association of America.
Okay. I wish. Does that exist? Are we sponsored? Can people be sponsored by chess? That's just another bit we could do.
That's a
sponsored
good point.
By chess.
Shouldn't burn that one now.
No.
Gotta come back to that one.
Yeah.
No, chess is fun, even though like you, I'm also bad at it.
Yeah. I know nothing about the actual strategy of the game. I'm literally just trying to take snapshots of random games and solve them.
My problem is I look at a chessboard and I think a good 3 to 4 moves ahead and kind of theorize about it. And I just kind of go like, fuck it. And I'm like, I'll move the rook up here and see what happens. I play a very experimental, exploratory mode of chess, which is great for learning about how other people play chess, but terrible for winning.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I too get a little impatient, and that is not what chess is about. Chess is about taking everything in. And that's my second rave. Go on to, we're going to finish this off. We got two more rants.
Hey, you know what I fell into a rabbit hole over the weekend on?
It seems to be related to the first one.
It sure is. It's urban planning in the state of Utah.
Oh my God.
Okay. So, I'm going to send you an image in Discord.
Oh, boy.
The morning this episode drops, I will also repost it on Blue Sky. So anyone who wants to can go check there and see what we're talking about.
Here we go.
This, the Mormon Wives show, it regularly shows us flyover shots of this one development in a suburb kind of outside of Salt Lake City.
I'll do my best to say what I'm seeing.
Yes, give me one sec here.
I'll use my descriptive language skills that I developed in primary and secondary school, as well as university. Oh, here we go. Oh, man. Okay, so what I'm seeing is, in the distance, some beautiful blue sky, slight partly cloudy, got some varying different clouds, a beautiful view of the mountains. Wow, look at those snow-capped mountains.
Look at that lake.
And that lake, I'm guessing that's Salt Lake. That's one of the lakes. And in front of this lake, kind of bifurcating the plains, there is a single four-lane, three median road that is just stretching from the lake in the distance to the camera. And on, oh man, on both sides of this four-lane, three-median residential way are these, it is flanked by these massive two-story houses, almost all white and with gray roofs, and these driveways that are just as big as them. What the hell? And they of course all have the same little sidewalk in front of it. But yeah, it's basically just a straight line of suburb, like, oh
no, surely it branches off to the sides, right? Surely it expands outwards.
No, it genuinely does not. It just goes, it's just one lane, and then the rest of it is, I guess, farm, which is great. I'm glad we're using the land. But why does this lane need to have... I'm really upset about the amount of lanes that are needed for this one residential road.
I became obsessed.
What happened?
So, okay. So we're going to go to a bit of a rabbit hole here. So, this is a road called Founders Road. It is part of a new development as part of a new temple church complex that got built outside of this town, a bit south of Salt Lake City, called Saratoga Springs.
Okay.
And it is essentially these houses. I'm going to send you a picture of the layout.
Okay, so Saratoga Springs, Utah Temple. So it looks like the camera shot is that we have is being taken from the temple going towards the lake.
Basically, yes. In other flyby shots, they do it from the other direction. You can see the temple.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, we see sort of the temple at the length of the... At the tip of this long string. And then there seems to be some development behind the temple. But I'm guessing most of that is just temple. I don't know how big it is.
It's this big temple complex, all ringed around by residential houses that all face into the compound area, basically. And the reason, like, what occurred to me as I was digging into this was like, oh, the reason why it's built four lanes like that is because it is, in fact, meant to support a lot of through traffic, which is not normally what you do in a suburb.
Oh,
because, in fact, what has to happen is everyone who attends church at this church temple complex is forced to drive through this one neighborhood. And yeah. I was like, the social dynamics in this town must be fucked. Like, what is going on with, like, the layout here that, like, everyone has to drive past these houses on their way to church?
Yeah.
And then... because looking into it further, it turns out that the this whole development is, one, only 3 years old, and two, was built by a development corporation that is owned by the Mormon Church. This is literally all this housing is church built, and it's all built in this way that, like, they construct this massively wasteful, sprawled out suburban nightmare in the middle of, like, the arid plain of Utah outside Salt Lake City.
So this land is not being used.
Yet. They never show us any amount of meaningful traffic on it.
Woof. Yeah, that's... Okay, well, I'm glad that's over there and not here, I guess. My goodness.
I just think that building stuff this way is bad.
It looks bad. It looks bad, and it seems to function bad.
Anyway, that's my rant.
Okay, and my last rant, it's going to be a quick one. Every so often, you know, I'm trying to manage this podcast and figure out what works and what doesn't, and data is crucial to that. So you can imagine my frustration when every so often we'll just get 100 and some plays, one per episode, from a nation state, like a city state nation like Singapore, or a nation like Hong Kong or something like that, that somehow just skews the data for the entirety of the past 30 days and makes us look
more popular than we are.
No, it doesn't make us look more popular. It just like fucks everything up. Like I can't see any genuine growth or anything like that, because there just is this bump in the way and I don't know anymore. And like RSS is supposed to filter that kind of thing out, but like there's no way somebody from Hong Kong just happened to listen to all 106 of our episodes in a day, you guys. I don't think that happened. If you are from Hong Kong and you listen to one episode every week or so, great. Hi, welcome. I'm obviously not talking about you. But yeah, it's super frustrating, and it happened a lot more at the end of like last year, but it still happens and I'm upset about it. I'm trying to do everything I can to at least observe what works and what doesn't. I mean, our blueprints episode did pretty good, but like now the whole percentage of the graphs and stuff just are like super, super annoyingly skewed for the next 30 days while that gets down, until there's another bot wave and it's like, ugh, I just have to like constantly do the math, and there's no way for me to manipulate my own numbers through RSS. I would have to find some other way to do that to get be able export. To filter that out. So that is unfortunate.
That's annoying.
Almost as annoying as the constant dragsters we've been having to fucking deal with all day.
Yeah, what is
going up,
with that?
And down the highway? Oh, it's my fault for living somewhere, I guess. But yeah, so if you heard some motorcycle noises, we tried to not talk on them, but like we also have shit to do, because this episode's running long. But speaking of data and supporting the podcast and helping us grow, you can listen to us. You get to listen to all 100 and some of our episodes in one day, like those people. But no, we have a lot of really great stuff coming up, for the next month. We're going to be doing our Pride Month this year. Lots of games featuring or made by or relevant to queerness and queer people. Actually, this time we're going to stay on theme, so look forward to that. I'm going to post what games we're going to be playing in our Discord that you can join, with the link in the description of the episode, and there are just links to all our other social medias and stuff for when we post little fun stuff, things like that. You can get notified. That's all that is. So thank you so much for having listened to this week's episode of Light Gaming. Join us next week. I can at least say next week. Join us next week when we are going to be playing the third runner-up from the Pride poll 2 years ago, I think. Jesus. Maybe. We're going to be playing Jusant.
Jusant.
More French games. Woo! This is, so that's really exciting for me. I've really wanted to play this game for a long time. Excited to get out of the backlog. And I'm excited to talk about it with you next week. And until then, I have been your host of Light Gaming, Jerome Barbatsis, and I was joined by my co-host of Light Gaming, Alexander Hambrock. Say goodnight to the gamers of Light.
Good evening.
Bye.